Are you ready? Are you ready?
Up in the sky, popping champagne, living my life in the fast lane. I want to change by the flowers. Ooh, flowers and flowers.
In the course of doing this project, I've developed a mental category for three types of foundational TV dramas. One is the innovator. The innovator is something like Gunsmoke or Dallas. It is generally the first of its kind or a bridge series that links a genre of TV past to one that does not yet exist at the time of the show's creation. It is often shaky, incoherent, and awkward. It can be tough to watch, but nonetheless rewarding and interesting to see where so much of what we see now came from. The second is analogous to Coca-Cola or McDonald's. It is the product of hyper-refinement and a writer's room that has since shed their pilot hymens decades ago. You can leave it on in the background of any task and retain pretty much everything, or be reasonably engaged while directly viewing. This is something like Law & Order, something so consistent that it has gone on forever and become a cultural institution and therefore foundational. The third is The Elite. It's a marriage of the former's novelty and invention and the latter's smoothness. This is The Sopranos, Deadwood, etc. I don't know where I'd put Gossip Girl. It's certainly not difficult to watch. I alternatively viewed episodes while doing dishes, responding to emails, but also directly with no other tasks. It goes down easy, and it doesn't sit with you heavy like Dallas does. It's not terribly innovative. It's mostly YA stock, with outsiders working their way in, young characters dealing with worlds a billion times larger than themselves in order to draw out very obvious and easy to understand character traits and development, and love triangles that mostly end happily. The argument can be made that it's the second category, because despite only going on for six seasons, as opposed to the double-digit numbers put up by similar shows, it has immense cultural purchase. Every woman ages 25 to 36, I know, was thrilled to know that I was watching this. Mentioning it today still gets a huge response, as the show's absurd, soapy storylines and strong archetypical characters loom large in former viewers' memories. It is arguably a bridge between the late 2000s and early 2010s and the optimist explosion of YA media for aging childless millennials, showing a modern blueprint for how it can be done, how you can get 34-year-olds to rave about watching simulated sex between rich high schoolers, as is common now. It is perhaps a greater accomplishment that it's about the idle rich of the Upper East Side and not the life-or-death struggles in a post-apocalyptic world. After all, that means the strength of the characters' storylines have to hold people, right? Gossip Girl was originally a novel by the daughter of German aristocracy living on the Upper East Side. Cecily von Ziegesar did not attend Yale or NYU like her characters, and in fact dropped out of ASU. But owe it to the strength of lived experiences and standpoint theory that she could capture the insane lengths people go to in a mostly meaningless world. More than most other Upper East Side alumnus, Ziegesar produced a cultural product that will last forever, and something I consider more fucking demented and insane than most shock images I viewed on a daily basis from the years 2001 to 2006. And possibly because the show is Limited Hangout, or MK Ultra, we will explain soon. So, I had seen some of this show before. If you're like a dating age male, in the early 2010s through the mid 2010s, really, you've seen this show. It's immensely, immensely popular. And I, viewing it, I kind of got what I expected. Like, very watchable, very YA, nothing really incredibly well done, but nonetheless easy to take in. Like, how did you find it?
Oh, yeah, it's very smooth. As you said, Dallas is just grueling. Because everyone is just looks like a catcher's mitt, and it's just a collection of relatively static close-ups, and there's just no like visual, not a lot of visual dynamism. Here, you've got the camera zipping all over the place. You've got the post-Tarantino editing, frenzy editing. You've got glamorous teens instead of carbuncular old Texans with, like, a bunch of fucking sun moles on their faces. And the plot is much juicier. It comes fast and furious.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's very much in the mold of Dallas, I would say. Like,
oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Love and intrigue among a rich set within like a subculture of rich people.
Yeah, but it has like, it has the gift and the curse of something made 30 years later, in that it's very self-aware. Like that, it's like, oh yeah, this is about like completely idle, useless rich children. Yes. And also, yeah, like every. Like the hot male protagonist on Dallas was Larry Hagman.
Yeah, even like Patrick Duffy. It's like you got the beefaroni curls. He looks like he's a solid like 35 years old. You got these just little porcelain dolls smooching each other.
Yeah, the just completely like spotless, like procedurally generated young adult actors.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, all of them are programs.
Yeah, and like the plots are fun because it's like, oh, how fucking awful are these girls to each other? Like they're sociopaths.
Yep.
Like it's kind of awesome. Like I love Mean Girls because I watched Mean Girls about the same time that I was reading Master of the Senate when I was a kid. And I was like, oh, these are the same thing. Like it's really, that's just the entire world is like just completely arbitrary made up shit. Like who gets to sit here? But as you get older and if you find yourself in more positions of power, who gets to sit here means like, oh, like, will your state's unemployment system work?
Yeah.
But I do like stuff like that. Like I think stuff about like very petty, high tension social drama is really, if it's done well and preferably done by someone, like if it's about like rich teen girls, if it's done by a rich teen girl who, or former rich teen girl who's like super self-aware, it's like it's probably going to be pretty good.
Yeah, it's basically it's like the Hunger Games if it all took place in the Capitol, you know.
Yes.
And it's in that same YA mold and with that same readability, because the Hunger Games is very readable and the movies are watchable for what they are. Not the last one, but everyone's always got to fucking cut the last entry into two movies, and it never works. You got to put too much sawdust in the fucking in the dough.
Yeah, it's the bottom shelf summer sausage.
Yeah, but it's like what about people who like are at the top of a fucking monstrous exploitative hierarchy and have so little connection to the real material world that they have to invest their emotions entirely in the most psychotically frivolous pursuits and then pursue them with total blank sociopathy.
That's what I love about the show. Like, because it's very YA, like it's filmed and presented to you like life or death, but the events are like in the first few episodes about who's going to go is Serena Vanderwoodson, who's like the it girl. She's like the big, big, looming large high school socialite that everyone gives a shit about, like the prettiest girl in school. And she's mysteriously disappeared and returned after a year. And now her and her former best friend hate each other. Is she going to go to the kiss on the lips ball? And like, even her mother, who's like, you know, like a fucking billionaire, like God knows what evil shit she gets up to. Like probably every man in her family has run coke for the CIA. Yeah. And she's like, are you talking to her fucking dumbass daughter? And she's like, are you going to go to the kiss on the lips ball? You fucking better go. like, who gives a shit?
Yeah. But you can see like how, it's like a fractal. Like these kids, because they're in school, they're totally frivolous. But at every level of that society, everyone is pursuing their goals with the same psychotic selfishness.
Yeah, and I kind of like it in that way because it's like, oh, these people don't need for anything, but there's always some game they're running, or most typically, like a problem that they created that they kind of wanted to be.
Yeah, just to give them something to do.
And I, yeah, so it reminded me of Mean Girls in that way, and also of Master of the Senate. But it's like, the final prize for these characters is like, you sit on the you're the chair of some vanity charity in the Upper East Side that doesn't do anything.
Yep, that's it. But all the other wives are jealous of you, and that's what matters.
Exactly. Like, that is the thing I love about it, is like, very few characters seem to be friends because they like each other.
No.
Like, oh, I think this person is funny, or they're interesting, or they've always been there for me. No, no one likes each other.
No, it's miserable. Really. Everyone hates each other. All friendships are totally contingent and based on like positioning, like triangulating a higher, like arbitraging all human relationships to bid up your personal clout stock.
Exactly. And that did sort of presage how we would all behave.
Yes, no, this is a very, very prescient program, because like the whole premise of the show is like these people become like self-aware because they're all being talked about on this gossip rag, right? The gossip girl who spills all the dirt. And so they become self-aware protagonists. Well, that's all of us now, because Gossip Girl is just the internet where we all operate all day in a virtual space of being observed and then create petty scandals and clout hierarchy chases to occupy our time there.
Yeah, it's like I almost want to move this sort of towards that first category of shows, because this is actually like the deeper you dig, it's actually very prescient. And like we joke, like I was like the first few episodes I was watching, I was laughing about it because it's like, who would read this fucking website? Yeah. Like it's like yeah, you live in like New Jersey and you're like, oh, I have to read the gossip blog about the one high school.
Yeah,
like this one private high school. Like you should be arrested if you
No, do anyone
that.
Who knows, yeah, like oh god. I mean, spoiler alert, but there's the last episode the people who are invested in who the gossip girl is. It's like you should all be in prison.
Yeah, like the amount of adults who are like, ooh, I have to know the guy. Like, imagine being like a 50-year-old adult who's like a billionaire, yeah. And you're like, all right, I need to know how Gossip Girl knew who the town slut was.
Yeah.
I haven't been in high school for 52 years, but like, I need to. Who got the scoop on Serena Vanderwoodson being a hussy?
Yeah. Oh my god, the tea isn't spilled. But that's just it. Is that like the assumption there is never challenged that these people are worth caring about, which is the undergirding assumption of all social media. That like any of our petty bullshit is worth caring about. If we dress it up like these things have weight, but at the end it is gossip mostly.
Right, and it's like we make fun of that, but at the same time, there are people who live you know in towns that have under 10,000 people, and they know every intricacy of New York media.
Yeah, drama, it's crazy.
Or just like the grown up versions of the Gossip Girl kids, except like not attractive.
Not at all. Oh god, that's definitely a step down.
It's like they are obsessed with the lives of like Brooklyn and Manhattan elite, and are like, I hear, you know, fucking, you know, this Politico writer is in the out with The Intercept. Like, fucking gives a shit.
Whenever a Greenwald thing drops, it's like, oh god, everybody just turns. It's like the Court of Versailles. Everyone's just muttering over their teacups. Like, who fucking cares?
Yeah. No. Yeah. The Glenn Greenwald. And this isn't an attack on Glenn, because I love Glenn. But yeah, anytime there's a Glenn thing, it's just like I see 50 posts from like 35-year-old adults where it's like, this is the most high school shit. Like,
wildly high school.
Yeah. It's like all media now, all journalists are just ugly, fucking overgrown high schoolers. And it's like the worst part is that we all participate. Because it's like, yeah, you have nothing to do. There's no community left. You can't go anywhere now. You can't do anything. So it's like you relentlessly gossip about like which two hideous cretins are fucking dating or who got fired from a shitty magazine you should never read in the first place.
Yeah.
But just going back a bit. Yeah. Eminently watchable. I do think this is one of those cases where I think there is some sort of artistic degeneration between Gossip Girl and Gossip Girl's successors, because Gossip Girl, I don't know, like Gossip Girl seems in on the joke in a little
definitely, like there's supposed to be a awareness that this is kind of awful and that everyone is kind of evil, but you know, if hell is empty and all the devils are here, we might as well dance.
It's interesting you say hell is empty and the devils are here, because that's what this show reminded me of. It reminded me of the problem of eternity as a theological problem. Mm-hmm. You get to heaven, it's never-ending pleasure, but that sounds like shit.
Yeah. No, misery.
Like even 100 million years of anything is torture.
Can't work. Cannot exist.
But you're also fundamentally afraid of eternity, of nothingness, consciousness zapped out of existence. And you're particularly afraid of 100 million or eternity of suffering. So it's like, you know, eternity fundamentally, maybe it does fundamentally exist. But how do you deal with the problem of heaven? I mean, if you talk to a Christian, they'll go, oh, well, there's you don't get, you know, overfilled on this.
Yeah, it's like, so, you need to just go to the buffet and you never get afternoon.
Yeah. But you just wouldn't notice. There isn't, like, this human sense of, like, longing for conclusion.
I mean, presumably what they're talking about is just a circle. Like, you're just eating a piece of pie for eternity and you just forget that you just ate it.
Yeah. But then you get into the problem of, like, well, how many things would have to be stripped away for me not to notice? Would I even be myself anymore?
You get like whittled to a fucking nub.
All our anxieties and everything are kind of what makes us human. It's the relief you get when when you're a husky boy and you take off your tight jeans. You get the red shit around your waist. But yeah, no, that's like what makes you human. So is it eternity that you're like a dog? You behave like you're just always like the dog whose owner has just come home and pouring your little meat cereal into your bowl. Maybe. But that's what this show reminds me of. It's like this is how you would have to do heaven. Yeah. You would all have to be with people you simultaneously like lust for and hate and love.
Yep. Yep. And
so because
just continuing like bounce. OK, now we're together. All right. Now we're OK. We're done. Now it's me and them. OK. All right. And just creating like new fractal combinations to just spark new narratives to play out with people and getting no pleasure from it at any point.
That's what that's what it felt like. Like it felt like this was like the dying DMT dream of someone, or like this is like some pervert's idea of heaven, or this is some 2001 Space Odyssey thing. That it's like I have to figure out my eternity, and my eternity is that I'm just creating these problems forever so I can experience the small relief of solving them. And you see that in the right, especially as the show goes on, like, because the later seasons are insane. The problems that it's a case that the writer's running out of ideas a lot of time, because a lot of characters are like, it's the Dallas thing where it's like, oh, I'm your, you know, secret cousin. Oh, actually I'm a con woman.
Yep.
Actually, but like, do you give a shit? No, I'm his daughter. Okay. Hey, what's up? I'm just like a completely antagonistic for no reason psycho who hates you, like the character of Georgina Sparks. But it's like, hey, Lee, thank you for creating some friction, some problems. I'm not just going to and forth between balls and things. Yeah. And I'm not just going to marry this, you know, whatever girl I was supposed to marry as what is essentially an arranged marriage, as we see, which is alluded to when they, you know, the characters Nate and Blair, when they're initially dating in the first part of the show.
Yeah, it's a dynastic relationship.
There's a funny scene in that first part where Nate, who's like the sort of non-rapist rich kid, there is the characters of this are hilarious because it's very like pre-Me Too, because one of the characters is just straight up a serial rapist.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like it's established very early.
Like he's just a serial rapist, and the way the characters talk about it are like, oh, he can be rude.
Yep. It's like, that's our Chuck.
Yeah, Chuck Bass. I met the guy who played Chuck Bass, by the way.
Bastard.
I met him at
Chuck Bass. Rob Bass's son, Chuck Bass.
No, I met Ed Westwick outside the TPM party in 2015.
Oh, really?
There are these like two really hot girls who asked me for a light, and then Ed Westwick just like walked by incredibly fucked up, and they're like, oh my God, this Ed Westwick. I was like, I'm not getting anything done tonight.
Yeah.
Anyway, he got me too.
Oh, he did. Me forward. Yeah, big time.
His character should have gotten Me Too'd in the show. He kind of does at one point, but it's like he's just like he attempts to rape two central characters in the first episode.
Yeah, seriously.
And everyone's like, yeah.
And it's like, oh, no, that guy. Like, that was one that just got me. Like, three episodes, like, maybe less than a season after one character comes to the rescue of his sister who is being raped, or is like an attempted rape is being performed, and he stops it and punches Chuck. He asks to hang out with him so he can inspire his writing. And it's like,
yeah.
Would you ever, ever talk to someone who did that that way? Would you ever just be like, I guess we're in the same clique, so I might as well find out what makes you tick, Chuck.
Well, that's – I have a we're going to get to my theory on this entire show.
Yes, I'm very eager to hear it.
It's pretty insane, but
– Oh, this is an insane program, and it requires insane solutions.
Yeah, but the characters are – yeah, insane. So you have the rapist Chuck Bass.
Chuck Bass.
You have Nate Archibald, who I think that's another Civil War joke. He's named after the basketball player. Like, come on. And Nate Archibald is just like, he's like the put upon prettiest boy in school who, like, you know, it has this sort of like wanderlust and yearning love. And his dad, my favorite character on the show is his dad. I love his failed dad.
Oh, God, that's so cool. Yeah. It's like
Captain Archibald.
Trying so hard to stay above water.
Captain Archibald, Nate's dad, is like, when you first see him, he's like, yeah, you know me. I'm just the most respected investment banker in the Upper East Side. And then, like, 10 episodes in, he's like, all right, yeah, so I do coke every day, but I'm not addicted to it.
Yeah, you know, it just helps me focus. It helps me trade. It helps me be a better trader for my clients, for the clients I need. By the way, I really need her mom as a client, so you got to marry her daughter.
He's like, the stuff he makes Nate do for him, not just like, you can't break up with your girlfriend because I need like this girl's mom's like Nazi gold. Yeah. it's also like when he gets caught with cocaine, he's like, yeah, you have to say it's yours. And he does.
Yeah,
it.
Of course.
Nate is such a cuck.
Nate is wildly cucked.
He goes to rehab for his shitty pal dad, who we later find out is like totally broke. Yep.
Mad off it up.
What an awesome character. Yep. That was like
Alma Garrett's dad.
Yeah. I loved him. Like I would love a show just about him. The Captain Rock.
Yeah, no, and the idea of like a guy in those upper circles, like spending way above his means and trying to keep afloat. That's a very interesting idea. Just this guy constantly trying to like rob Peter to pay Paul and like embezzle and like move money around to stay just one step ahead. That could be very interesting. Like all these other kids are just flouncing about in their Roman orgy-esque high school experience, and this guy's out here just breaking a fucking sweat.
Yeah, and like just making your kid go to rehab for you is so funny.
Yeah, that's amazing. That it's like, I'd go, but I have all these accounts to watch out for, you know? I have to keep not putting food on the table.
Yeah, he's not even doing... I look... Breakout character of the show for me. Yeah,
absolutely.
With Chuck Bass, they give him pathos by making his dad mean.
Yeah, he's got a mean... His daddy didn't love him. So it's not his fault that he just is compulsively raping women.
Yeah, with Chuck, they like redeem him by making him get shot in Prague, and then he's like, I've lost the desire to rape. Yeah.
It'd be funny if he got shot in the dick. It's like, yeah. I just can't do it anymore, so ladies, relax.
So, but he, you know, spoiler alert, Chuck ends up with Blair, Nate ends up, I love what they did with Nate's character, because it's very true to life. What does he end up doing? He ends up running some shitty news.
Oh, God, yeah. Yes. Oh, that ruled. That scene was great because he showed him with his private jet for his, like, website. And I did the math for when Gossip Girl went off the air. And I think that it was 5 years later. I think it's, like, right around now, which means that there is no way in fuck that website did not completely implode and get sold off to creditors with like 2 years ago.
That website would be like one of those websites I wrote for in 2015 and then never heard from again.
Yes.
And like never had a physical address. Yes. Like
it'd be like Deadspin. Like,
yeah, no one's reading The Spectator. Yeah. Like what a shitty, like who the, like that company could not afford a private jet.
No. Well, they just thought, they anticipated, I think, that, you know, the social media format of everybody being on each other's hot goss, taking their days up as their new form of entertainment. That was the future, but they just didn't anticipate how fast it would accelerate and how that those like website, those gatekeeping websites that have content were going to be eventually in much faster than they could have perceived and anyone could have anticipated, totally subsumed by social media by Twitter and Facebook and shit.
Yeah, it completely they hit on most of their points, but they missed on sort of the neoliberal aspect that not only would gossip replace all news and information, and information would be controlled by a deluge, not a spigot. They missed the aspect of it that we all have to make it ourselves.
Yep, that it's all user generated content. Yeah,
and there's but yeah, you have to make your own shitty crap that everyone hates, and you're gonna love it. You're gonna use it 20 hours.
You're gonna say La Hell Site while you're on La Hell Site all day every day.
100% of people who say Hellsite would pay to be on Twitter.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, my God. If they put a paywall in there, the actual dedicated user base, who is walking away? What, they're going to they're going to go to Mastodon?
Yeah. No, fuck no. Man, no one wants to go to Mastodon.
I mean, my God, conservatives do nothing other than complain about being shadow banned on Facebook, and they created like four different versions. A Gab and Parler, and it's like, no, you go there because everyone's there.
Yeah, no, that's the point. There's no point in pulling your pants down and showing your cock to everyone if no one's in the room.
And the thing is, it's like
even if you're like a completely like black belt epic groiper, like you don't want to do that on a site where no one is.
Yeah.
You want to freak out the most people.
Yeah. And that means that like they could just say, hey, yeah, we're making you pay, and there would be no huge defection. I mean, obviously, people who just, scroll are going to probably say, fuck it. But the dedicated users, they're not going anywhere. And those are the ones that people want to watch. And that'll be enough, because they'll pay to make their own content for each other.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But we have, rounding out the characters, we have Serena Vanderwoodson, who's the It Girl, and Blake Lively, fascinating acting choices.
I mean, if you want to call it that, wow. She is not good at acting.
I love her. Just every scene of hers is supposed to be emotional. She's just like, accurately, I guess, if that character is a real person, always sounds like she's off like 40% of his Xanax.
Oh, absolutely. Her face is just slack. Like, she doesn't seem to be able to actually manufacture expressions with her. It's like she's just very heavy lidded in a way that feels like she's almost wearing a mask.
Yeah, she's always just like, it's always just like, I really have to tell you something, but I have to go. She probably got paid $800 billion to do this. All she, yeah, and that's what I another thing I love, the self-awareness of the show, the emptiness of it all. She's the It Girl, the one everyone cares about.
There's nothing there. There's no content whatsoever.
Nothing. She has nothing. Yeah. She has no personality. Like,
at least Blair is defined by her, curdled ambition and paranoia and desire, and her, because she is not so like effortlessly like self-possessed. At least there's like, that makes her somewhat, have texture. She has no neuroses. She just reacts.
Yeah. It's like, she's like Philip K. Dick's Golden.
Yes. She just reacts to other people's neuroses bouncing off of her, because she's the transcendent being. She's the Bodhisattva who emerged. She hit bottom and she transcended. And now she is an enlightened being amongst the heathens.
Yeah, it doesn't matter that she thinks she killed somebody. It's an awesome plot point. But yeah, there's the character of Blair Waldorf, who's sort of the final, one of the final central characters. As Matt said, pure unbridled ambition and resentment. Wants power just for the sake of power. A great, completely cruel character. Yeah,
monster. Very fitting that she ended up with Chuck, the serial rapist.
Yeah, no, and that, like, that's Bill and Hillary.
100%. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah. We have Dan Archibald,
Humphrey.
Dan Humphrey, very interesting character. I have a lot on this later. I have a lot on this. Dan Humphrey, he's an outsider. His dad is he's the former singer of a once popular band. He's presented as poor because, his dad owns probably what in reality would be, like, a $1.7 million place in Park Slope versus
it's $300 million place.
It's Dumbo. It's in one of the, it's in the it's in like a loft Dumbo. Yeah, which yes, that is a seven figure home. The guy owns an art gallery, but yes, I think they're trying to make the point that he's well, but you know, like he was a rock star. He was from he just got paid. You know, he didn't pay. You know, there's two types of wealth. Yeah. You're getting at the end of the day, even if it's a lot of money, you're drawing a paycheck, at least for part of it. And then there's like where the money just is there, and they, for that,
yeah, you're a rent collector. Yeah,
for them, they're just pure rentiers. They've never worked for anything, and that does breed a social distinction. But it is funny coming, you know, living in this country with its radical income inequality to be asked to care about that social division.
Right, yeah. This guy's dad, like, it's like the Wall Street Journal income graph, where it's like, look, he can barely afford this with 120K yeah, it's like, private what, between, school.
Between the $100,000 for the private school and, you know, the ski trips and vintage guitars, they're only saving, like, $15,000 after taxes a month.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I do love him as a fail dad character because, like, he's just fucking up his kids and everything. Oh, yeah. Like, no wonder his son's the way he is. Because just every time they're alone, he's like, yeah, your mom's probably going to come back,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Hey, does your mom still love me?
Hey, like, so what's going on? What's up, man? You want to check in on her?
What's up, man? There's Jenny Humphrey, who's played by Taylor Momsen, who she... I think just like left acting to become a punk.
Yeah, she was. I remember when this show was on, I didn't watch it, but I was certainly aware of the phenomena. And I remember her as the breakout tabloid star of the gossip star of Gossip Girl was her. She was like in a punk band. She would take her top off. She was very rowdy. I don't know what she's doing now.
I don't know either. She's probably sitting on the board of a fake charity and like married to, I don't know, the. The rightful owner of the German art from the Simpsons Hellfish.
Yes.
She's probably... Get the room, party boys.
Yeah, she married Baron von Wurzenberger. Fine, boys.
Yeah. Get the room. But she's an interesting character because she's the striver. Like, she just desperately wants to get in. And she kind of does it before fucking her own plans up.
But she is also someone who wants to work. Who is ambitious and creative, which does mark her as socially inferior in some ways.
Yeah, no, the highest level in the social hierarchy of Gossip Girl, the highest level is to just be an animal of pure instinct who reacts like Serena, like Nate.
And like maybe you design handbags, but that's like as like your fifth idea of something to do with your time after you got married. She's trying to like be a fashion designer. She's on that grind.
Yeah. So the big question throughout the entire show is who is Gossip Girl?
Yes. Who is it who is secretly writing a incredibly popular scandal sheet about the specific group of kids in this class in this private high school on the Upper West Side?
And, you know, just to clarify, Gossip Girl greatly affects people's lives. Like it really fucks things up.
Oh no, it's like it's not like it's kind of clever and self-aware because the Gossip Girl copy, which is read by Kristen Bell, it serves as exposition for the viewer, but then it's also something that the audience that the cast members that the people in the show read and respond to. And people find out things about their the significant others and family members from reading the site, and it changes their decisions and people getting can shake people's lives because I mean having your secrets exposed, especially as a hormonal teenager, that is catastrophically traumatic. And the Gossip Girl world is one where at any moment anyone could just find out your deepest secret and then your life is ripped open. That's the world these kids have created for themselves. And Gossip Girl is like this like punishing Grim Reaper.
In real life, like at least one kid would have committed suicide.
Oh, for sure.
Because of Gossip
Girl. Oh my God, can you imagine? Can you imagine having that? Like, yeah, we have people who are there to see any kind of infidelity or vulnerability that is even remotely public and many that are thought to be private. You people would have nervous breakdowns.
So it turns out the Gossip Girl all along was Dan Humphrey.
Yep.
Because it was the only way he could get with Sabrina or Serena. And this is where I started thinking. Because originally I was thinking, like, you know, this is about the archetypes of the American rich. You know, you have the idol media publisher, the serial rapist, the it girl, the blah, blah, blah. Who's Dan Humphrey? Who's Dan Humphrey? Let me think. Sort of middle classy from Brooklyn, ends up in elite Manhattan circles because of his incredible manipulation and control of blackmailing information. Who? Jeffrey Epstein. This is about, this entire show is about Jeffrey Epstein.
Okay, yes.
This is Limited Hangout or MK Ultra.
Both.
Cecily Von Ziegesar, her family was, they ran Bowen Company, which was a boutique investment bank. Her husband is head of the Judd Foundation, some bullshit Upper East Side nonprofit. She's very well acquainted with this world. This show is entirely about Epstein. The way that the characters abuse each other, it mirrors what people on the Upper East Side really do. Glenn Dubin was ready to sell his fucking daughter to Jeffrey Epstein.
That's true.
Glenn Dubin met his wife. He bought his fucking wife from Jeffrey Epstein, allegedly parody. This is about how what they do to each other in a background is like chimps on a social hierarchy torturing each other because they have nothing else to do. And Dan Humphrey, out of sheer ambition, how Jeffrey Epstein went from being a fucking college dropout to a tutor how did he get in? At an elite boarding
school. No college degree.
That's how Dan Humphrey gets in. Dan Humphrey gets in through an elite private Manhattan learning institution, just like Jeffrey Epstein did. And like Jeffrey Epstein, Dan Humphrey realizes his only way in is to find out everything that they want to keep a secret. And then, more importantly, to do what Epstein did, because Epstein was not just a blackmailer. Epstein sold a lifestyle to these people. And just like, because they can't depict actual child prostitution on CW, what they have to show is that Dan Humphrey does fulfill a service for all these people. He gives them what they want, in which they are all a star in their own show about their lives. That's what Gossip Girl is. It's giving them the chaos they want. It gives Blair the fucking... The impetus for drama and enmity that she wants. It gives Serena enough impulses to fucking react off of. And how does Serena respond to this? How does it, you manipulated all these events for the last 6 years of my life. You made everyone, you know, think I got fucking pregnant and like killed a guy and all this shit. Oh my God. I love you so much. They get back together. They get married because of it. And that mirrors who's Serena. Serena's fucking Ghislaine. Who is also a fucking it girl with
socialized.
A mysterious father who disappeared.
Yes. Oh, my God. Oh, shit. God damn it. That's so. Yeah, he's like the sociopathic climber who grabs on to someone from high society who eventually gets suborned into his dark service. Yeah, like as the Mephistophelian figure of like indulgence. For idle, wealthy sadists.
That is why Serena actually falls for him. Not because, you would go through so many lengths to show that you love me. No, it's because it's like we both have this taste. We can't show, you know, we can't literally show the consumption,
right. The
defilement of human
stuff,
flesh.
Yeah.
But it's Francis Wolcott. I listen to the earth. It tells me there is no sin. What I do, there is no sin. I can cause whatever chaos, whatever in my life. I can cause mayhem and destruction and misery. And it's all fine. Everything is allowed. There is no sin for me. I'm just a creature of pure reaction, self-possessed. I just want this to thrive off of. And you want the same thing. You did the same thing. We're perfect for each other. Just like Ghislaine and Jeffrey were. You know? There was probably sexual attraction there, but really, what was it really? We both believe there is no sin.
Yeah, we both have no limits. And let's find the outer reaches of human depravity together. Sail the wine dark sea of human excess and see how far we can go.
So, yeah, I only figured this out. I had to, like, sleep on watching the last episode. Because, like, Michael Bloomberg.
Oh, God. Oh, it's amazing. I thought it was Duranker. Yeah, that's right. This disgusting gnome billionaire mayor is fascinated by the goings-on at a fucking high school. normal and cool.
Realistic. Actually realistic.
It is realistic and horrifying.
Yeah. Michael Bloomberg would, if Gossip Girl was a real website, Michael Bloomberg would be jacking off every day.
He would go in every day for his shake-up meeting with his staff and be like, oh my God, did you hear about what Blair wore to the charity ball?
Yeah, he would look at the Gossip Girl website like it was a fucking Land's End.
Also, Donald Trump would do that. Donald Trump would also religiously read it. Oh my God,
that would be
very unfair to Serena. Treated her like garbage.
That would be his favorite.
He would love it.
Are you kidding me? But that's with Bloomberg. My mind started rolling because initially I thought the point of the Dan character was, this shows a role in upper middle class to middle class drivers who work their way into wealth as sort of stenographers for the rich, which is what Dan does in the show. Like, he's an author who writes about the lives of the Upper East Side and his experiences with the rich Manhattanites. And they try to the people who aren't ready for the Epstein pill, they lead them in the other direction because they have things like Jay McInerney, the author of Bright Lights, Big City, which is a great book about like sort of rich Upper East Siders, like this show is in there. And they're like, oh no, you see, he's one of them. Like he represents the role of the media and its relation to the ruling class. But no, this is MK Ultra.
Yep.
This is the signal. This was like presaging the Epstein drops 10 years before they happened. And like, okay, do you remember the episode? It's the end of season 3. Where Gossip Girl releases all the tips because Serena provoked it.
Yes.
And Dan, everyone's pissed, but Dan's like, well, whatever.
Yeah, that's okay. I mean, it seems fine to me.
Because just like Epstein can't be blackmailed by Epstein. Like, Epstein doesn't care if you say he's a pedophile. He's like, I don't give a shit. Like, yeah, I'm evil.
Yeah, that's my whole deal. Yeah, you want to, you know, here's my card. I'm untouchable. That's what's so amazing about the last episode is when it's revealed, not just like it's one thing that Serena gets like her kinky thrills realizing she's found an evil soulmate, but everyone else, people whose lives were really traumatized by Gossip Girl, just one by one, just go like, you know, I guess it was all for the best and whatever. You know what? You're all right. Just shrugs it off. Like, yeah, oh, we're all just completely depraved. We have absolutely no moral core at all. And like maybe like there was some anxiety because they thought maybe one of them did and maybe they thought it was Dan. And now they're just like, oh, you are just as disgusting as the rest of us. This is great.
Yeah. And Dan, what does Dan do during the periods where him and Serena are broken up? He fucks every girl.
God,
in New
York.
He
just has sex with everyone.
He fucks everyone.
It's insane.
When Jeffrey Epstein gathered all those MIT scientists around and he would like ask them dumb questions and then go, what does this have to do with pussy?
Yeah.
Because that's all he cared about was pussy and the pursuit of evil and power. And that's all Dan cares
that's
about.
That's it. Just give it to me. And he's supposed to be that. And he is supposed to be the one who has some sort of remove from this whole world. And instead, he is so single-mindedly fixated on entering it that he will just shed any human sense. And the show at no point seems to recognize that as a sacrifice or as some sort of like a human declension. It's, if anything, it's him becoming the best version of himself.
Yeah, no, because he got in. Yeah, the most important
that's all
thing
that matters.
Is that you get in. Yes. And it doesn't matter what you do to anyone because like so many just explicit like characters that existed just to be evil. Like Ivy Dickens or Georgina Sparks, they're also in it.
Yeah.
Like everyone, yeah. Like they're part of everyone's happy ending.
There can be no real transgression that can ever not be forgiven, which is the case when you're at that level of lack of accountability.
It's like if Donald Trump lives another 10 years, he will be at some wedding with the
100%
picture. They will do anything to anybody, including sometimes each other, but they always realize they're on the same team. It's why, you know, these people, including Donald Trump, including Bill Clinton, could have known about Epstein and Maxwell's proclivities and been like, yeah, here's my daughter. Isn't it great to meet my young daughter? Yeah. Why Glenn Dubin, and Glenn Dubin, by the way, is he's Bart Bass. That's
Absolutely. Yeah, total business psychopath willing to just auction off family members for business purposes.
Yeah, that's Dubin. But at the end of the day, it's like they have an easier time forgiving each other because it's like, oh, we both have this taste for human flesh.
Yep.
We understand. We understand. It's like two super saiyans fighting each other. If a normal person harms them, they will go to the ends of the earth to ruin them. But each other, at the end of the day, we're all on the same team.
Yep.
Exo Gossip Girl.
Yep. And then there's a showdown over the course of the season between Bart and his son, Chuck, for control of the company. And at one point, Chuck is attempted to be murdered by his father in a plane crash, an engineered plane crash. He appears at a function that his father is at to accuse him of the attempted murder. They go to the roof, and Bart falls off while trying to attack his son and is holding on. And Chuck and Blair just watch him. Just watch him, and he just falls off, and then he's dead. And at no point is the fact that they just cold-bloodedly stood there and watched the guy as the fucking fingers fell off is just absolutely never even addressed. It's just taken for granted. Well, he was trying to kill you. What do you want? You save his life, then you still have to wrap him up and take him to the police or something. That's the big hassle. Just the easiest thing to do is just let nature take its course. That makes sense, right? And everyone just... that is the assumed logic, moral logic of that situation.
Yeah. No, it's just, it is a show of people at their basest behavior.
Yep.
Like, it's like Monster of Florence.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
But yeah, I gotta say, just as a straight up piece of YA drama from 2010, I liked it. I thought it was easy to watch. It was fun. But now realizing it, as a parable, a dead drop about Jeffrey Epstein, now I think it's fucking genius. Yeah. Now it's in the third category. Now this is fucking elite.
Honestly, yes. Like, I mean, the same way it's like viewing, The Shining through the lens of the fucking moon landing or something. It just makes it sparkle. There's so many dimensions to be pulled out of it. And it really is an instructive document. It was an effort either through just the market expressing itself or a government intervention or just a touch from the muse. It fully articulated the relationship the moral reality of living at like the this point of decadence in our empire and that the people who would negotiate that space would be just sort of over time and friction turned into just shark teeth, just absolute monsters, and that there's a man named Jeffrey Epstein out there, and that it's the future for all of us because we'll all be absorbed into this, the Gossip Girl world. We'll all become these decadent subjects of like self-amusement that will destroy all of us eventually.
Yes, and we'll be wondering who the Gossip Girl is while the toxic salt water rises to our eyeballs and drowns us all. Michael Bloomberg will fly away to the Mars colony that turned out to be a grift all along. There's no oxygen there. The rich share one last insane orgy before their heads explode from space pressure. Humanity is gone. Octopuses take over. They do this whole thing. They make this show featuring other cephalopods.
Yep.
Happens until the sun blows up. Happens in another galaxy. We all get to heaven. We're all Dan Humphrey or Serena Vanderwoodson. Everything done will be done again under the sun unto death. XO Gossip Girl.
All this has happened before. All this will happen again.
I'm Felix Biederman.
I'm Matt Crispin.
See you next time on the show. Bye.